Okay, hi. It's Sarah Coleman coming to you again. This time, I've put a different spin on it. I've actually interviewing a woman that was involved. I won't say she's a prison wife, but she is involved with someone that was once incarcerated and stuff. So, without further ado, Tiffany, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
I'm Tiffany, and I am with Mike. We've been together almost 3 years now, and we've had quite a journey.
Okay. All right, Tiffany. So first, we'll just start out on how we met. So I met Tiffany, I believe we were in a prison wife group, right?
Yes.
Sunshine's crazy prison wife group and whatnot. And
on Facebook.
So we met through Facebook and whatnot. And I don't know, Tiffany just, she's stuck out to me. She's, you know, younger than me and whatnot. But I've, you know, always liked how Tiffany, like, handles herself and whatnot. So this is actually her second relationship. So if you would just tell me... Just a little bit, I guess, about your first relationship, briefly.
I mean, it was with someone that I met on the internet. He was in New York, and he ended up being incarcerated, and you know, at first I thought I was the only, you know, female involved, but I wasn't. So when I found out about the second, basically off and on, back and forth, and we ended up basically just parting ways, just because he lived you know, a double life, basically.
Okay, so I guess I'll ask a more pointed question. I won't make it so broad. I apologize for that. So, how long were you involved with this person?
Oh, Lord, years. The incarcerated part, it was probably a year and a half.
Okay, a year and a half. And you guys communicate, what was your form of communication?
Letter and phone.
Letter and phone. Okay.
Yeah.
And did you prepare for him to come home?
Yes. Yes. Ticket, clothes, you know, everything. Yeah.
Ticket, clothes,
and everything. Even reached out to his family at one point.
Wow. So you had really planned on making a life with use this term loosely, with this gentleman. So you had planned to make a life with him, right?
Yes.
Okay. And could you tell me, Tiffany, how that felt, to basically put your life, I don't know that you put your life on hold, but, to make plans, for a person that, basically, I guess you knew, you know, through, letters and phone calls and stuff. Could you just tell us, you know, how that felt to wait for him and then for things to not work out?
Well, you know, the preparation of, you know, of having someone that was incarcerated to come home, not only are you thinking about the financial aspect of things, you know, therefore, you know, they feel comfortable and they don't feel eager to get back in the streets, you know, for they could be patient and still able to, you know, live life right, you know, like go on and find a job and stuff. So not only is it financial, but it's emotional too, because when a person is incarcerated for so long, they become used to being institutionalized. So their emotions are shut off. They are, when they're in there, their world, you know, they're set to their routine, they're set to authority, and they don't know what's going on out here. They don't know if gas prices and milk prices to, you know, if rent's gone up. So when they come out, you know, and the whole world is different from what they went into, you know, like, you have to also prep yourself to help them through their way, you know, through, you know, getting through this part. And not everybody gets, you know, the therapy or, you know, the you know, gets transitioned out properly. So, you know, it was hard, you know, trying to, you know, not only are you mentally and financially trying to prep, but you find yourself being lonely, you know, and you only get to talk to them for certain times of the day, for certain amount of time, you know, maybe like 15 to 30 minutes, depending on the location, or, you know, how much money you have to even put on the phone. And, you know, the snail mail really is what it is. So it's hard to, you know, even prep for it. And then, you know, for it not to work out is even more devastating, because you put your life on hold. Not only did you, you know, put your all into the relationship financially, mentally, and emotionally, you know, but, I mean, you hold out for the person sexually. So, you know, and then for it not to work out is just, it's basically a waste of time. Because not only are they doing time, but you're sitting here holding off on your life, you know, in many aspects, just for it not to work out. And that's time you can't get back.
Absolutely. You know that I know that. So let me ask you, Tiffany, what made you decide, you know, after, you know, getting your heart broke or being disappointed by this first relationship, what made you even want to consider giving Mike a chance? Mike is who she's involved with now.
Well, first off, it was different. With him, because I took the time to get to know him. And so first and out on the street, okay, so your first instinct with the person out on the street, and this goes from very professional, wealthy people to, you know, the very lowest, poorest people of all, is, you know, is the physical attraction. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with Mike, we sat down, we got to know each other, we told each other the story, you know, we basically got everything out the way, and so it wasn't just a physical attraction at first, because after, you know, my first relationship with the incarcerated person, you know, I took time for myself, then I tried to get back in the dating world. Well, that didn't go so well, because it was basically, for me and the next person, it was the physical attraction. So, and it just wasn't working out for me. And so I got on the internet, met him, and, you know, just his approach, his attitude, the way he presented himself it's a typical incarceration. You know, how people, how can you say it? You know, it's like they're acting this way and saying this just because they're incarcerated. Well, that wasn't the case with Mike, because he wasn't desperate. You know, he didn't ask me for anything. You know, he accepted, my baggage, and I've accepted his. So I think it was more so his approach, his the way he carried himself, and, you know, really just looked past the situation and seen who he really was as a man and an individual that was in a, you know, unfortunate situation. And then, you know, just seeing that more honesty was with things, is it really helped. And then the more visits that, you know, when I seen, you know, my daughter with him, it, you know, it was just like, wow, you know, just, you can't break, because when you get kids involved, it's like, okay, this is a wrap. You have to go forward with this. But it was a good thing, because they really clicked, and they really, you know, it like I said, it was just the way he carried himself.
Now, how long did you know him prior to him coming out?
So, we met in 2015. No, our first visit was in November 2015. So, we was talking for 3 months before I went to visit him. And then he got out in August, so about, what, nine months, maybe?
9 months.
Nine, 10 months. Yeah, about 9 months.
Okay. And where was he stationed, I guess, or
so
housed?
He was in Terre Haute, Indiana, at the federal camp.
Okay. And you were in Indiana as well, right?
Right. I was in Indianapolis, which is about an hour from where he was located.
Okay, so when he came out, did he come to live with you in Indianapolis, or did he...
No, so he didn't come there because in the process of him trying to... So he switched his address and stuff. He put in to come there, but since I was the immediate family, probation wouldn't let him.
Okay.
So he came to Maryland to live back with his parents.
Okay, sorry, that's not me snoring, that's my dog DJ. I apologize. So I know this story, but could you please tell them about your leap of faith? Because I understand you're how old, and how old were you at the time?
Well, I'm 29 now, so I was 26.
So you were 26 at the time, and how old was McKinley, your daughter?
She is 6 now, so she was probably 4.
Yeah, she's 3 or 4. So could you tell, if you could just tell our listeners what it is that you did in preparation to come here, the leap of faith that you did in coming here. Could you let us know?
Well, for starters, when he first got out, and he came to Maryland, you know, I had everything prepped for him. From, you know, a phone that didn't have no camera or internet access, it was ridiculous. Like, it looked like an Obama phone. He paid $40 for it.
Uh-huh.
I bought him from regular clothes to sleeping clothes to... Guys, go ahead. I'm on the phone. Babe, go ahead. So, went and buy interviewing clothes to, you know, every hygiene thing you could possibly think of,
wow,
including face towel and towel. So he gets on, you know, I met him at the bus stop, and he, you know, gets on the bus to come here. In transition, you know, he ends up losing his freaking suitcase. And mind you, I'm emotional. It's really ridiculous. So he gets up here. He goes to a halfway house. And so I was communicating through his mom, because that was the only communication I could do at that time, until he got his cell phone and the suitcase that he lost. So once he ends up, you know, we communicate and stuff, then he starts doing home passes. And then he starts eventually going home for good, where he was on home confinement, which isn't like house arrest because you don't have a bracelet. Basically, they just drive by. You know, they'll call him, say, hey, I'm driving by, and then they'll, like, you know, make him come out and show his face, and they go on. Or they'll call the house phone twice a day, morning and night. So he had to be present at the same time on, you know, trying to find a job. You know, I did his resume, you know, job applications, studied for his driving test over the phone where he can get his permit, because he didn't have any of that before he went in.
Mm-hmm.
So he came out with good credit, no driving record, and no child support. Great.
Awesome.
So it was perfect. So then we ended up doing visits. We came for Thanksgiving. We rode the train 18 hours, but it ended up being like 21 for Thanksgiving. And then we ended up coming back up for Christmas. Again, on, mind you, all of this is at the same time still paying phone money, you know, still giving him, like, cell phone money, you know, still trying to maintain the house, and, you know, as a single mom with an everyday job, it was kind of hard. But, and then we went back and forth for a little bit on when we...
So you were coming from Indiana to Maryland.
Right. I was coming from Indiana to Maryland.
Wow, okay.
For Thanksgiving and Christmas. So then... He finally, you know, we was like, dude, we have to make this transition. Like, we can't hold off no more. My lease was up in January, and we just knew we couldn't make it because you know, he was saving. I really couldn't save because everything was going on. So I decided, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just do tax. Around tax time, we'll go ahead and just make this move. So even though we knew it was going to do it around tax time, we couldn't really figure out when the taxes was going to be. And we was just, you know, just trying to figure it out. Finally, I was just like, dude, let's just do it March. I'll leave March 3rd. So packed my house up. You know, literally, once I got my tax money, I put it, you know, in his banking account, let him do the transition, because he ended up getting a job. And so I ended up putting, you know, he ended up getting the apartment. He got all of the furniture delivered to the house and paid for the truck, you know, from Indiana, I mean, for me to move to Maryland. And then basically just packed the truck up and went on our, I think 11 hours, was it, babe? 11-hour drive. And the thing was, he got up that morning that I left, went to work, and stayed up literally 24 hours. Because he stayed on the phone with me and checked in with me and stuff and made sure the house was all situated and everything when I got home. So we didn't go to sleep until actually that night that I got in. So I got in around what? Was it, babe, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, maybe? And messed with this because I drove a 16-foot truck with this car dolly on the back, so I was pulling my car. And so I was about, you know, 30-something feet, maybe more, that was driving by myself with McKinley in, you know, 11 hours. So, you know, so it was crazy. So not only when we came in, we had to deal with the dolly and, you know, get all that situated, but then we ended up having to take the truck back that morning, and then his uncle helped us move all my furniture up on the third floor in this apartment, and then we ended up going to sleep that night.
Okay.
So he was up all, like 40, 50-something hours. It was crazy.
Okay.
Maybe, no, not that long. It was quite a bit, though. It was almost, it was a long time.
Okay. So you, guys, if you heard that, she took a leap of faith after 9 months, of them, dating, well, you know, talking to each other, you know, him being in prison and whatnot. She took this leap of faith. She sent her tax money up here. You know, he had prepared a place for her and whatnot. And could you tell them, because I know your housing situation, so you basically left certainty for uncertainty. And could you just let us know, I'm so proud of her because she knows there have been tons of prison relationships and stuff. And I'm telling you, it had to be at least a good 6 to 8 that was going on. And other people came home, you know, the men either stopped before, you know, they would get close to their release date and they would, you know, choose to do something different or like her first experience and whatnot. Could you please tell us now, how long have you guys been together now?
In November it'd be 3 years.
3 years. And could you tell them briefly what you've, because you also took up training to be a nurse. Tell them a little bit about what you've done since you've been here.
Oh, in the housing situation, like you said, you know, I gave up my child care assistance that I got from the state of Indiana. It wasn't much, but, I mean, every little bit helped when you're a single mom. And then I gave up my Section 8 housing.
Wow.
Major smoothie. I gave up my Section 8 housing to come up here and to pay $1,700 in rent. But since I've been up here, it's been March, April, May, June. So it's been 1 year and 3 months. We basically, I mean, I've been a CNA, but because I transferred that from Indiana, but I ended up just getting a better job. Instead of a nursing home, I work in a hospital now in Virginia. And then we went from having a 2005 car to to, we have a 2015 Chrysler 200, and then we have a 2018 Kia Optima. I'm not being materialistic.
No, you know, I got you.
Showing that eventually, you know, you upgrade. And then he's went from a shift lead. They promoted him in orientation to be shift lead, a wing stop, and then he went from assistant manager to general manager.
Wow.
And then he got his license. He got his permit when I was in Indiana, but he actually ended up getting his license when we got the new car.
Okay.
And then when we got his Chrysler. And then we just actually recently moved into a two-bedroom and a den apartment.
Awesome.
So, I mean, we're definitely moving along.
That is amazing. Sarah, and could you?
She's interviewing us. She's going to...
I'm going to get him next. Could you tell me? I'm going to get him next. Could you tell me if there were any what advice would you give to another person that's in the same or similar situation as you? What advice were there any challenges or anything you know within the relationship? Or, you know,
of course.
What type of challenges were there?
We definitely had challenges, and I would say that communication and you know, during, first off, for the side of the person that's been incarcerated, I definitely would say to get help when you get out, because literally, I'm telling you, he went from being in there relying on people to coming out, everybody relying on him.
Wow.
Even from, so he had full responsibility in the moment that he went home. He relied on his parents until he actually moved in with them. Like I said, he went to the halfway house at first. So he ended up, I mean, and his parents did rely on him in a sense. You know, his mom relied on him to do better. I mean, his parents relied on him to do better. So not only was there pressure, but there was a whole child and a whole significant other that is relying on you to make this move count, but not letting them down. So that's a lot of pressure, you know, of getting a job, getting saving money. Like, there's a lot that comes with that, you know. So to deal with that, of course, you know, he's broke down a couple times. So just being supportive and understanding and not being selfish, because I caught myself saying, well, you need to get a job, you need to get a job. Well, and I wasn't focused on, getting interviews or getting calls back, but then getting denied. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't putting myself in his shoes in any situation. At one point, his parents wasn't either. You know, because there's some other, you know, drama as well.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I would say to get help and get coached and, you know, for you can adjust properly. And then, you know, for the woman's aspect, I would just say, you know, just be supportive and understanding, and, you know, don't be selfish, because, you know, not only does his mom not want to share him with me, I didn't want to share, you know, him with her in a sense, you know what I mean, because I thought this was his time, and his time included me and McKinley,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean, so when she would do things I didn't like, you know, I couldn't do nothing about it, because I had to deal with the situation, I was in her house, I was, you know, how to obey her rules, and he was living there, so I couldn't mess it up for him. You know what I mean? So it always helps if you understand. And the communication between me and him has grown, too, because you have to communicate how you feel. And, you know, you have to be gentle with one's feelings and how you say things. And, you know, and I've learned that over time, too. So, and, you know, if it's worth the risk, then, I mean, I say take it, regardless if, you know, if another person feels like you're messing up. I know a lot of people thought, oh, this is just another tie. No, it wasn't. And I
absolutely
knew that in my heart. That's why I didn't feel myself to prove him to everybody else, because I felt like it was my business, it was my life, and I know what decision I'm making is solid. You know, so I wasn't out here trying to convince people, you know, what I was doing was right. I was like, okay, that's how you feel, then that's how you feel. You know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
You know, you just try to follow your instincts, and I prayed on it the entire time from the moment I was driving that truck. You know, because I didn't want to make another mistake. Who would?
Absolutely.
Who would want to continue to start over in a state they don't know? Price of living is twice as much as where I came from. You know, I just gave up my whole stability. So, you know, that's what I would say, is just, you know, just go for it. and have faith in, you know, in the relationship that you have, and that God's going to, you know, guide you the proper way. So, I mean, that's the only thing. It's really what I did. My life that I was living, it was good, but I knew my life could be better. So that's why I was like, what do I have to lose? Because this is my first time starting over with the whole child. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is what I said. If it's worth the gamble, then gamble it.
Oh,
you want some, McKinley?
My last question to you, so what was it like your family and friends, you know, how did they feel about, you know, did anybody think that you were crazy or, you know, what was the support like?
There was none.
Okay.
On my side or his.
There was
none. Both sides got the same thing, you're crazy. Hmm. But on his aspect, they thought this was too much for him to handle. They thought I was just a white woman with a mixed kid looking for a daddy. Looking for a get out.
And what is the age difference? Thought. What is the age difference between you and Mike?
Five years?
Oh, I didn't know you guys were that close. Okay. No. Well, listen, Tiffany... you already know how proud I am of you. You know, I talk about you all the time, and I really appreciate you taking the time out to share your story. And I hope, you know, that others can be as encouraged. I mean, I'm older than her, but she inspires me. I know Tiffany's backstory. I know where she came from. Tiffany is just, she's phenomenal. She shouldn't be where she is. You know what I mean? If society, I'm telling you, because I mean, I hope you don't mind me sharing, but, Tiffany is, you know, I believe the only one out of how many siblings do you have, honey?
Three. There's four of us.
Yeah. Four of us. The rest of the family, you know, is on drugs really bad. I know that, they shunned her because, you know, she has an African American, you know, child. You know, because Mike is, you know, African American. Well, I mean, her child is mixed. So I know that she had to go through a lot. And, you know, like I said, she had the, even though she had the voucher and stuff like that, I've always known her to work. I've always known her, you know, she's just, I'm amazed by her. So I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to interview you, and I'm going to conclude this, and then I'd like to pick up and interview Mike, if that's possible.
Now let me ask him.
All right, well, no. Well, let's just finish this. All right, so thank you all for listening in, and Tiffany, again, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Hey, baby.
Wait a minute, Tiff.